Blog Talk Radio.
In his terms of his comments on this whole gun issue, he talks about
guns buzzing. He's talking about machine guns. None of these guns are machine guns.
But is he going to have an impact politically? He wants to be a counterweight to you. He wants to go into these races in 2014 and spend along with you. Are you preparing to arm politically your people who agree with you, candidates and whatnot, in 2014?
We have people all over, millions of people, sending us $5, $10, $15, $20 checks saying, stand up to this guy that says we can only have three bullets, which is what he said. Stand up to this guy that says ridiculous things like the NRA wants firearms with nukes on them. I mean, it's insane, the stuff he said.
All right, but let me ask you about background checks, because the mayor referred to the polling. 90% of Americans want universal background checks. Here is this survey from Quinnipiac this week. Among those people who own guns, 85% support. Are you thwarting the will of the American people by standing in opposition to universal background checks?
No, not at all, because here's the thing. The whole thing, universal checks, is a dishonest premise. There's not a bill on the Hill that provides a universal check. Criminals aren't going to be checked. They're not going to do this. The shooters in Tucson, in Aurora, in Newtown, they're not going to be checked. They're unrecognizable. NRA supported the National Instant Check System on dealers. We're a billion.
That was the reference to 1999 when you testified.
We're $1 billion into this system now. It's not fair. It's not accurate. It's not instant. It's not instant. The mental health records are not in the system, and they don't prosecute any of the criminals that they catch. It's a speed bump for the law abiding. It slows down the law abiding and does nothing to anybody else.
That's the that was the chairman of the president of the NRA. And I wish I had the clip for that Bloomberg on Bloomberg talking about. Oh, here it is. Maybe this is it. This is Bloomberg, I think.
Because well, I think gun owners really have spoken. When you do the polling, most gun owners think that an assault weapons ban makes sense in this day and age. That study has been done again and again by both Republican and Democratic pollsters. And the trouble is that the NRA is just never willing to have any restriction whatsoever, no matter how reasonable it is. The Supreme Court, fortunately, was. They said having reasonable restrictions is consistent with the Constitution.
Does that dynamic change now? Does the NRA have disproportionate power? You argued a moment ago that they didn't have the power they once had in a president.
I'll give you a good example. I'm not the kind of person to sit back and say, you know, the world is getting worse for my kids, and when I'm gone, I don't care about their lives. I do care about their lives. I'm going to do everything I can while I'm alive to make the world a better place for my kids, but also for society. And if you take a look, one of the things they decided to do in this last election was to support some candidates that were running against those that had great records with the NRA, where the NRA was putting their money into one side. I decided to put money into the other side.
Joe Baca in California, one of those Democrats that you targeted.
We won 4 out of 7. 4 out of 7 where the NRA supported every one of those 4, and we won with a small amount of money. There is this myth that the NRA is so powerful. You go back to what happened back when the Democrats lost after the assault weapons ban. I don't know that the two were connected then, but today the NRA's power is so vastly overrated. The public, when you do the polls, they want to stop this carnage. And if 20 kids isn't enough to convince them, I don't know what will.
So the polls say that the they don't. It's less.
I don't
than
think
half.
People want that.
It was over. It was the public polls that he's talking about. They did a national poll. In fact, I just saw it tonight on the news that they said back in, I believe, a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted. They
more than 50% supported.
57% supported gun control laws. Now they did the same thing a month later, and only 47%
want
gun control, because, you know, after the shock was over and we started realizing, hey, we need our guns, you know. People are going to need guns, and these bastards want to take them away. So it's like, you know, it's the way it is. It's a, you know, you gotta there's not much you can do. I mean, you just understand that Bloomberg, I've never seen anybody so obsessed
with taking
stuff from people. I mean, just to the point of what size drinks they can buy. You know what I mean? And the guy's nuts. You know, totally, absolute nuts. Right? So, yeah, I can't say enough about that. So, you know, the fact that everybody down there that lives in that prison.
Prison city,
yeah. Prison city is unbelievable. But here, this is something that was interesting today. The day that TV News died, I don't particularly agree with Chris Hedges on this, but it's an interesting one to note because Chris Hedges also filed a lawsuit against Obama and the federal government for the NDAA, National Defense Act.
Mm-hmm. We didn't hear anything much of it.
That suit's still pending, I guess, but it's like... but the what I think is kind of interesting...
This is from Truth Dig.
He says that, you know, and I found this to be interesting is that Lila and I started our radio show March 4th of 2003, and they canceled Phil Donahue's show, right before the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah.
And let's see, it would probably be February 25th, 2003. Let me see. Chris Hedges was a pretty famous columnist, said that.
Let's read this. I'm not sure exactly when the death of television news took place. The descent was gradual, slide into the tawdry, the trivial, the inane, and into the charade on cable news channels such as Fox and MSNBC, in which hosts hold up corporate political puppets to laud or ridicule and treat celebrity foibles as legitimate news. But if I had to pick a date when commercial television decided amassing corporate money and providing entertainment were its central mission, when it consciously chose to become a carnival act, it'd probably be February 25th, 2003, when MSNBC took Phil Donahue off the air because of his opposition to the call for war in Iraq. Donahue and Bill Moyers, the last honest men on national television, were the only two major TV news personalities who presented the viewpoints of those of us who challenged the rush to war in Iraq. General Electric and Microsoft, MSNBC founders and defense contractors that went on to make tremendous profits from the war, were not about to tolerate a dissenting voice. Donahue was fired, and at CBS, Moyers was subjected to tremendous pressure. An internal MSNBC memo leaked to the press stated that Donahue was hurting the image of the network. It would be a difficult phase for NBC in the time of war, the memo read. Donahue never returned to the airways. The celebrity trolls who currently reign on commercial television, who bill themselves as liberal or conservative, read from the same corporate script. They spin the same court gossip. They ignore what the corporate state wants ignored. They champion what the corporate state wants championed. They do not challenge or acknowledge the structures of corporate power. Their role is to funnel viewer energy back into our dead political system to make us believe that Democrats or Republicans are not corporate pawns. The cable shows whose hyperbolic hosts work to make us afraid of self-identified liberals or self-identified conservatives are part of a rigged political system, one in which it is impossible to vote against their interests of
vote against their interests of
Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, General Electric, or ExxonMobil. These corporations, in return for the fear-based propaganda, pay the lavish salaries of celebrity news people, usually in the millions of dollars, They make their shows profitable. And when there is war, these news personalities assume their patriotic roles as cheerleaders, as Chris Matthews, who makes an estimated $5 million a year, did, along with the other MSNBC and Fox hosts.
Yeah.
$5 million a year. Wow.
It does not matter that these celebrities and their guests, usually retired generals or government officials, got the war terribly wrong, just as it does not matter what Francis Fukuyama and Thomas Friedman were wrong on the wonders of unfettered corporate capitalism and globalism. What mattered then and what matters now is likability, known in television and advertising as the Q score, not honesty and truth.
Television news celebrities are in the business of sales, not journalism. They peddle the ideology of the corporate state, and too many of us are buying. The lie of omission is still a lie. It is what these new celebrities do not mention that exposes their complicity of corporate power. They do not speak about Section 1021 of the National Defense Authorization Act, a provision that allows the government to use the military to hold U.S. citizens and strip them of due process. They do not decry the trashing of our most basic civil liberties, allowing acts such as warrantless wiretapping and executive orders for the assassination of U.S. citizens. They do not devote significant time to climate scientists to explain the crisis that is enveloping our planet. They do not confront the reckless assault of the fossil fuel industry on the ecosystem. They very rarely produce long-form documentaries or news reports on our urban and rural poor who have been rendered invisible, or on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, or on corporate corruption in Wall Street. That is not why they are paid. They are paid to stymie meaningful debate. They are paid to discredit or ignore the nation's most astute critics of corporatism, among them Cornel West, Medea Benjamin, Ralph Nader, and Noam Chomsky. They are paid to chatter mindlessly hour after hour, filling our heads with the theater of the absurd. They could pay clips of their television rivals, ridiculing them, and ridiculing their rivals in return. Television news looks as if it was lifted from Rudyard Kipling's portrait of the Bandar log monkeys in The Jungle Book. The Bandar log, considered insane by other animals in the jungle because of their complete self-absorption, lack of discipline, and outsized vanity, chant in unison, "We are great, we are free, we are wonderful, we are the most wonderful people in all the jungle, we all say so, so it must be true."
That's what they say. It's exactly what they're doing. You know, it makes you sick.
Yeah.
And when I reached him by phone, see, Chris Hedges pitched it, when I reached him by phone recently in New York, Donahue said of the pressure the network put him near the end, it evolved into an absurdity, he continued. We were told we had to have two conservatives for every liberal on the show. Oh, God. And I could...
I was considered
a liberal, he said, and I could have Richard Pearl on alone, but not Dennis Kucinich. You felt the tremendous fear of corporate media had to be on an unpopular side during the ramp-up for war. And let's not forget that General Electric's biggest customer at the time was Donald Rumsfeld, then the Secretary of Defense. The elite media features elite power. No other voices are heard.
Donahue spent 4 years after leaving MSNBC making the movie documentary Body of War with fellow director-producer Ellen Spiro about the paralyzed Iraq War veteran Thomas Young. The film, which Donahue funded himself, began when he accompanied Nader to visit Young in the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Washington, D.C. "Here's this kid lying there, whacked on morphine," Donahue said. "His mother, as we are standing by the bed looking down, explains his injuries. He is a T4. The bullet came through the collarbone and exited between the shoulder blades. He is paralyzed from the nipples down. He was emaciated. His cheekbones were sticking out. He was white as the sheets he was lying on. He was 24 years old. I thought, people should see this. This is awful. Donahue noted that only a very small percentage of Americans have a close relative who fought in Iraq or Afghanistan, and an even smaller number make the personal sacrifice of Thomas Young. Nobody sees the pain, he said. The war is sanitized. I said, Thomas, I want to make a movie that shows the pain. I want to make a movie that shows up close what war really means. But I can't do it without your permission, Donahue remembered. Thomas said, I do too. But once again, Donahue ran into a corporate monolith. Commercial distributors proved reluctant to pick up the film. Donahue was told that the film, although it had received great critical acclaim, was too depressing and not uplifting. Distributors asked him who would go to see a film about someone in a wheelchair. Donahue managed to get openings in Chicago, Seattle, Palm Springs, New York, Washington, and Boston, but the runs were painfully brief. I didn't have the money to run full-page ads, he said. Hollywood often spends more on promotions than it does on the movie, and so we died. What happens now is that peace groups are showing it. We opened the Veterans for Peace Convention in Miami. Failure is not unfamiliar to me, and yet I'm stunned at how many Americans stand mute.
Yeah. So anyway, it's frightening, you know. It's really frightening.
Yeah.
And I always admired...
I always liked Phil Donahue.
Yeah, I always admired him. But, I don't know. The next one I wanted to read was... I had a couple of good health related stories, and I thought you might be interested in this. This one here is about.
Yeah, I wondered about that. Health insurance rates
to double. Yeah, as Obamacare fully kicks in. Now, this is by Natural News. Writing on a blog of the department. Writing on a blog. Of the Department of Health and Human Services on the third anniversary of the passage of the Affordable Health Care Act, more popularly known as Obamacare, Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius had this to say about the impact of the law on insurance rates. As a former state insurance commissioner, I know that for too long, too many hardworking Americans paid the price for policies that handed free rein to people to health insurance companies. For more than a decade before the Affordable Health Care Act, premiums rose rapidly, straining the budget of American families and businesses, and insurers often raised premiums without any explanation. The Affordable Care Act is working to bring affordability and fairness to the marketplace by barring insurers from dropping your coverage when you get sick or placing a lifetime dollar limit on your coverage.
Sebelius goes on to imply that provisions within the law requiring more transparency from insurance companies, for instance, will eventually help lower rates, though she never says so directly. In other words, she's dodging the issue of rising premiums with good reason. Premiums under Obamacare are likely to double for most Americans, according to health insurers, who are being forced to comply with Obamacare's stringent coverage requirements.
Wait, weren't premiums supposed to go down?
Health insurers are privately warning brokers that premiums for many individuals and small businesses could increase sharply next year because of the health care overhaul law, with the nation's biggest firm projecting that rates could more than double for some consumers buying their own plans, the Wall Street Journal reported March 22nd. Insurers made those projections in sessions with agents and brokers. They provide some of the most damning evidence so far of just how much Obamacare will force companies to raise rates when major provisions of the law kick in next year, just as scores of industry experts and economists warned would happen.
Such predictions don't jive with the rosy and misleading rhetoric from Sebelius and her boss, President Obama, the latter of whom said in 2010, "You be able to buy in, or a small business will be able to buy into government insurance pools, and that will lower rates. It's estimated by up to 14 to 20% over what you are currently getting." and that's money out of pocket. Your employer isn't, it's estimated, would see premiums fall by as much as 3,000%, which means they could give you a raise. Both the president and his team don't understand free market economics, or they do, and they have been intentionally misleading. Either way, the figures the insurance companies are projecting are the polar opposite of what Americans are promised by Obamacare advocates regarding the future cost of policies. And really, prices for such services have never really gone down. There's no question premiums are still going to keep going up. Larry Levitt of the Kaiser Family Foundation for Research Clearinghouse on the healthcare system told CBS News shortly before Obamacare became law. There are pieces of reform that will hopefully keep them from going up as fast, but it would be miraculous if premiums actually went down relative to where they are today.
Yet another Obamacare lie. The one ace in the hole the government retains, however, is regulatory power over the insurance companies in terms of price increases. Under Obamacare, insurers have to request rate hikes, and they must be approved by government bureaucrats, the vast majority of whom have never run a business, never had to meet a payroll, and never had to cover employees' health insurance and other benefits. So in this sense, the government very well could keep rates artificially lower than they normally would be, but while requiring insurers to cover more people for less, they won't be in business long, and that could well be the administration's goal. Carriers will be filing proposed price increases with regulators, will be filing proposed rate increases with regulators over the next few months, WSJ reported. Time will tell how that goes, but the word is out. What Americans were told about lower premiums under Obamacare, like most of what they were told about the law, was a lie.
Ouch. Mm. So, folks.
I don't know. We'll see.
Not a good thing.
Natural News.
I wanted to, there's a couple of health things I wanted to read here I wanted to read about the top 10 breakfast cereals most likely to contain Monsanto's GMO corn. And being a gluten-sensitive individual, I wanted to read 10 symptoms, six signs you might have gluten sensitivity and not know it.
Okay.
And you know what? That's freaky because they're the same kind of sensitivities that a diabetic has or like everything else.
Well, let's read that first.
It's really interesting, I thought.
That seems to be expanding. A lot of people
have
gluten allergies.
And you'll wait till you read some of these amazing things. It says, six signs you might have gluten sensitivity and not know it. Recognition of gluten sensitivity and the consequence of celiac disease, if that sensitivity is ignored, is not so easy to determine early. Medical tests fail often enough, turning up negative, while people who are gluten intolerant continue to suffer a plethora of symptoms.
Plethora of symptoms.
Yeah.
Those people who are often told it's all in their heads after testing shows up negative, but traditional gluten intolerance blood testing looks for only one of six polypeptides in wheat and gladden. There are five others, wheat germ, agglutinin, there's a whole bunch of them. Any one or combination of those five can cause anyone to have a reaction to wheat. Symptoms alone can be attributed to several other issues. Even gluten intolerant or celiac disease sufferers will manifest a variety of different symptoms. It's rather complex. The article will list six common symptoms and then advise on how to make sure you are not or are not gluten intolerant after spotting the symptoms that are all too familiar to you. Sometimes, these symptoms appear right after meals and don't last long. In other cases, the symptoms can last for weeks or even chronically, which often leads to a diagnosis of an autoimmune disease instead of gluten intolerance. Here are the six symptoms of gluten intolerance. Number one, obviously, I'll do one. Obviously, there are gastrointestinal, stomach, and digestive problems. These can include one or some of the following: gas, bloating, queasiness, abdominal cramping, constipation, diarrhea, or an alternating condition of both, irritable bowel syndrome.
Headaches and or migraines. Fibromyalgia is not a disease, it's a syndrome. And getting a medical diagnosis is bogus. You don't need to be told you have muscular and connective tissue aches and pains. That's what fibromyalgia means. Fibro, meaning connective tissue, myo, meaning muscle, algia, pain, means pain, thus fibromyalgia.
Emotional issues involving chronic irritability and sudden irrational mood shifts.
Neurological issues, including dizziness, difficulty balancing, and peripheral neuropathy affecting nerves outside the central nervous system, resulting in pain, weakness, tingling, or numbness in the extremities.
Number six, fatigue, whether chronic or almost after every meal. Chronic fatigue syndrome is like fibromyalgia, a symptom or a syndrome, not a disease. If that's what you're diagnosed with, it means your doctor can't locate the cause of your fatigue. Yes, all of these symptoms are common to other health issues and disease. That's why symptoms alone as a diagnosis is perplexing. How to make a final decision?
First, list every single symptom that nags you, whether sporadic or chronic. Don't make assumptions like my back problems are from sitting too much. Just list them without trying to explain them away. Then go to a gluten-free diet for 60 days. If you feel you can't, that may already indicate you're addicted to gluten. We are often addicted to things we're allergic to. That gluten-free diet would include wheat, rye, barley, spelt,
kamut.
Never heard of it. Oats and triticale, which are grains with gluten. Quinoa, buckwheat, and sorghum grains are gluten-free, and so is rice. Packaged foods have different ways of sneaking in gluten. Read those labels carefully. Here's a reference site and source for all foods.
Celiac.com.
This can be simplified by ignoring processed foods, sauces, and salad dressings, and preparing meals from bulk items. After the 60-day period, go over your notes and see how many of your symptoms remain. If they are mostly gone, you might decide to stick with your gluten-free diet. If you're uncertain, you go back to your former diet to see if those symptoms come back with a vengeance. And after a six-month gluten-free period, it may be possible to gradually incorporate some of the foods you've abandoned without consequences. I don't think so, because I've been gluten sensitive for about, 6 years now?
Yeah.
And 5 years anyway. I find that every time that stuff comes into my diet, and even in the minutest amount, I still have a reaction, either through heartburn, indigestion, or psoriasis, I break out, or something like that. And as soon as I find it, or as soon as I can clear it up, stop eating it, or or identify it, then my gluten goes away, my allergy goes away, or it goes down to very, very, not very small.
The symptoms of your
allergy. Right, my symptoms. So I advise you to really, really take it seriously if you have any of those symptoms. And this gluten, that tolerance it's never going to come back to you. You're never going to have a tolerance for it. I've never had. So
and on this site there's a menu for gluten-free diet.
Yeah. So you can check that out.
Free e-cookbook explains secrets to gluten-free food. Get a recipe app. From TotalRecipeSearch.com. So that's helpful.
Yeah. So anyway, just so you know that's what's going on there. And there's one other before we go to break I'd like to read. That's how to spot. Oh, no, I should do that then.
How to spot associates.
Yeah, that's a good one. Let's see. This one here. And then there's another one about six alkaline foods to eat every day for whatever. No, I like that one too. But
the top 10 breakfast cereals most likely to contain. Monsanto's GMO.
Right. So,
oh, my goodness. Here they are.
Ones. Cocoa Puffs.
Corn Chex.
Frosted Flakes. Kellogg's now. This is Kellogg's Frosted Flakes. Quaker's Honey O's.
Honey Graham O's. Honey Nut Chex.
And Heart to Heart Tashi. Kellogg's Corn Flakes.
Kellogg's Corn Pops.
And Kellogg's Kicks. Oh, no, General Mills Kicks. Sorry.
Yeah.
And
Barbara's Puffins Peanut Butter.
Mm.
Go pick up a little bit. Oh, Chia Plus Coconut Chia Granola.
This one has no GMOs. Nature's Best. There's only one brand of breakfast cereal I know that has 100% non-GMO and 100% organic across their entire product line. That company is Nature's Path.
You've had some of their products.
Have I?
Yeah, they sell them at Stop and Shop.
Do they?
If you buy breakfast cereal and you don't want to eat Monsanto's GM corn, always choose cereals from Nature's Path. That is my number one most wholly trusted cereal company. Many natural blends that appear to be healthful or natural are actually not organic or GMO-free. For example, Barbara's Bakery cereals are not organic, although they are positioned in store shelves along with other organic cereals. They are actually made with conventional crops grown with pesticides, which may include Monsanto's Roundup. You may also notice that most of the cereals most likely contain GM corn are children's cereals. It is the children in America who are being fed the most GMOs. This represents a highly unethical food experiment being conducted on an entire generation, and the long-term effects of human consumption of GMOs are simply not known.
What we do know is that rats fed the very same Monsanto GM corn develop shockingly large cancer tumors. And they show them here.
Oh.
Photos released by a French research team, some large cancer tumors growing at a strongly heightened risk in rats fed a lifetime of Monsanto GM corn is shown below. According to that study, 70% of females died premature and showed significant damage to their liver, kidneys, and other organs. Holy crap. Can you imagine we're feeding this to kids, you know, every day?
Oh, keep going down there. The top 10 the vitamin D deficiency. Okay.
Oh, this is critical to I didn't know this, but aspartame is to be secretly added to milk, yogurt, and eggnog.
Yes, we read that last time.
Yeah, man, we did.
Uh huh.
Oh, okay. Anyway, microwave ovens destroy anti-cancer nutrients in your food, and. When we come back from break, I'd like to possibly read the best vitamin deficiency and the five best foods, alkaline foods that you should eat every day.
Okay, let's go and choose a little music quickly.
Yeah. We'll be back right after that. I think.
Leo can find some.
Good play.
I got one more thing I wanted to one more health issue thing I wanted to talk about. But and it was the where is it? Just no, where is it? I just saw it. Oh, yeah, here's 6 alkaline foods to eat every day for vibrant health. Now we can all do this. I like to give people advice, you know, some advice on these things since we read it all the time.
Yeah.
And
something positive you can do to make yourself better.
Yeah.
Or feel better.
And if you suffer from, especially from a gluten allergy or some kind of intestinal thing or, you know, or just feel lousy, the next article after this I wanted to read about the vitamin D deficiency symptoms. And this one here is about the top 6 alkaline foods to eat.
Okay. The typical American diet is deadly one, consisting primarily of toxic and acid-forming foods like processed sugars, artificial sweeteners, refined grains, conventionally produced meats and dairy, and hidden genetically modified organisms. All this combined with a plethora of other challenging environmental factors such as lack of rest, psychological stress, pharmaceutical drugs. I mean, it's no wonder that more and more people are being diagnosed with chronic degenerative illnesses or otherwise deadly conditions for which modern conventional medicine claims to have no cure. One of the basic underlying problems with this unsustainable lifestyle, and there are many, is the average consumer's lack of understanding that the body must balance the blood's pH level at slightly alkaline level of 7.365 in order to survive. When a person ingests food to burn for fuel, the digestive and metabolic process transforms it into a kind of ash, which is either acidic or alkaline. The laws of modern biochemistry further explain that it is not the organic matter of foods, but their inorganic matter, such as calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, sulfur, phosphorus, that is how they break it down in our bodies, that determines either the acidity or alkalinity of this ash residue. For this reason, and because of all foods in nature contain both acid and alkaline-forming elements, according to the Conscious Living Center, balance is achieved afforded as a direct result of the foods we choose to eat. Too many acid-forming foods can have a dire consequence for our health, with acidosis being a common diagnosis in diabetics, for example. This is because when the nutrients required to maintain this slightly alkaline state cannot be obtained from food, the body will instead draw from its own stores like the bones or other vital tissues, damaging its ability to repair itself and detoxify heavy metals, thereby making a person more vulnerable to fatigue and illness. And the margin for error is small. Even only a slight acidic pH of 6.9 can actually lead to coma and death. Of course, the ultimate goal is balance. Eating too many alkalizing foods can lead to its own fair share of complications over time. But the risk of this is seemingly less likely given the current sorry state of today's highly addictive consumerist diet. To combat the effects of such a diet, here are 6 of the most alkaline-forming foods to work into your diet every day. Due to the healing yang and nature of these foods and traditional
roots and vegetables,
Chinese medicine and their tendency to be rich in minerals than many other foods, it may be safe to say that if you can't get enough of them, look for radishes, especially red, black, or white, beets, carrots, turnips, horseradish, and rutabaga. Ready to eat after steaming for just 15 to 20 minutes, root vegetables will help you feel both satiated and better grounded. Cruciferous vegetables. These are the veggies we all know and love, made even more delicious with just a small amount of healthy homemade sauce like pesto. Choose from broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and the like. Leafy greens. That includes kale, Swiss chard, turnip greens, and spinach, of which spinach may in fact be the best pick, known especially for its rich vitamin K and foliate content. Spinach is also packed with vitamins and minerals, photochemicals, antioxidants, and fiber, helping to improve digestion and even vision. Garlic. A true miracle food, garlic appears at the top of innumerable lists of foods that encourage overall health, and alkaline-forming food is no exception. Among its other benefits are its ability to promote cardiovascular and immune health by lowering blood pressure and cleansing the liver and fighting off disease. Cayenne pepper, that's capsicum, as part of a family of potent tropical peppers which contain enzymes essential to endocrine function. Cayenne is among those alkalizing foods. It's known for its antibacterial properties and its rich supply of vitamin A, making it a helpful agent in fighting off harmful free radicals that lead to stress and illness. Lemons. Lemons may be the most alkalizing food of all. As a natural disinfectant, it can heal wounds while also providing potent and immediate relief for the hyperacidity and virus-related conditions, as well as coughs, colds, flu, and heartburn. Lemon also works to energize the liver and promote detoxification. So it can't hurt to think twice about what's on your plate at your next meal, but not doing so might. Just applying the age-old motherly advice to eat your vegetables can be a solid first step in achieving better health.
There you go. So, just to recap, root vegetables, cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cabbage, leafy greens, spinach, I guess is the best, right?
Yeah.
Garlic. I try to put garlic in a lot of stuff. I buy garlic powder. I try to put
cayenne peppers and lemons.
And cayenne pepper and lemons, yeah. So that's that, folks. I hope you get something out of that. And there's just one more I wanted to read.
You want to read to How to Spot a Sociopath. Ten red flags that could save you from being swept under the influence of a charismatic nut job. One of the most offensive duties of being an investigative journalist is taking out the trash, exposing liars, fraudsters, con artists, and scammers for the people they truly are. Each time we investigate a sociopath, we find they always have a little cult group following of spellbound worshippers who consider that particular sociopath to be a guru, a prophet. Sociopaths are masters at influence and deception. Very little of what they say actually checks out in terms of facts or reality, but they are extremely skillful at making things they say sound believable, even if they're just making them up or out of the thin air. Here I'm going to present quotes and videos of some legendary sociopaths who convinced everyday people to participate in mass suicides, and then I'm going to demonstrate how and why sociopaths are operating right now today. Why cover this subject? I've seen a lot of people get hoodwinked, scammed, or even harmed by sociopaths. And it bewilders me that people are so easily sucked into their destructive influence. I want to share with the natural news readers the warning signs of sociopaths so you can spot them, avoid them, and save yourself the trouble of being unduly influenced by them. Much of this information is derived from the fascinating book, The Sociopath Next Door, which says that 4% of the population is sociopaths. This book is fascinating read. I bet it is.
10 signs for spotting a sociopath.
Sociopaths, number one, are charming. Sociopaths have high charisma and tend to attract a following just because people want to be around them. They have a glow about them that attracts people who typically seek guidance or direction. They often appear to be sexy or have a strong sexual attraction. Not all sexy people are sociopaths, obviously, but watch out for over-the-top sexual appetites and weird fetishes.
Number two, sociopaths are more spontaneous and intense than other people. They tend to do bizarre, sometimes erratic things that most regular people wouldn't do. They are unbound by normal social contracts. Their behavior often seems irrational or extremely risky.
Number three, sociopaths are incapable of feeling shame, guilt, or remorse. Their brains simply lack the circuitry to process such emotions. This allows them to betray people, threaten people, or harm people without giving it a second thought. They pursue any action that serves their own self-interest, even if it seriously harms others. This is why you will find many very successful sociopaths in high levels of government in any nation.
And sociopaths invent outrageous lies about their experiences. They wildly exaggerate things to the point of absurdity, but when they describe it to you in a storytelling format, for some reason it sounds believable at the time.
Sociopaths seek to dominate others and win at all costs. They hate to lose any argument or fight and will viciously defend their web of lies, even to the point of logical absurdity.
Sociopaths tend to be highly intelligent, but they use their brain power to deceive others rather than empower them. Their high IQs often make them dangerous. This is why many of the best-known serial killers who successfully evaded law enforcement were psychopaths.
Sociopaths are incapable of love and are entirely self-serving. They may feign love or compassion in order to get what they want, but they don't actually feel love in the way that you or I do.
Sociopaths speak poetically. They are master wordsmiths, able to deliver a running stream of consciousness monologue that is both intriguing and hypnotic. They are expert storytellers and even poets. As a great example of this in action, watch the interviews of Charles Manson on YouTube.
Okay. Sociopaths never apologize. They are never wrong. They never feel guilt. They can never apologize, even if shown proof that they were wrong. They will refuse to apologize and instead go on the attack.
Sociopaths are delusional and literally believe that what they say becomes true. Merely because they say it. Charles Manson, the sociopathic murderer, is famous for saying, "I have never killed anyone. You don't need to kill anyone. Think it. Have it. Here." Pointing to his temple. "I don't need to live in this physical realm." And how to dispel illusion and get to the truth.
Sociopaths are masters at weaving elaborate fictional explanations to justify their actions. When caught red-handed, they respond with angers and threats. Then weave new fabrications to explain away whatever they were caught doing. A sociopath caught red-handed with a suitcase full of cash he just stole, for example, might declare he actually rescued the money from being stolen by someone else and that he was attempting to find its rightful owner. He's the hero, see? And yet in reality, he will simply pocket the money and keep it. If you question about the money, he will attack you for questioning his honesty.
Sociopaths are masters at presenting themselves as heroes with high morals and philosophy. Yet underneath it, they are the true criminal minds in society who steal, undermine, deceive, and often incite emotional chaos among entire communities. They are masters at turning one group of people against another group while proclaiming themselves to be the one true savior. And wherever they go, they create strife, argument, and hatred, yet they utterly fail to see their own role in creating it. They are delusional at so many levels that their brains defy logical reasoning.
You cannot reason with a sociopath. Attempting to do so only wastes your time and annoys the sociopath.
Tips for exposing sociopaths. Start fact-checking something they claim. One simple method for dispelling sociopathic delusion is a start fact checking their claims. Do any of their claims actually check out? If you start digging, you will find a pattern of frequent inconsistencies. Confront this suspected sociopath with an inconsistency and see what happens. Most sociopaths will become angry or aggressive when their integrity is questioned, whereas a sane person would simply be happy to help clear up any misinformation or misunderstanding. Beware of fact-checking the sociopath by asking other people under his or her influence. The sociopath will usually have a small group of cult-like followers who do not believe their fictional tales, but who actually internalize those fictions to the point where they rewrite their own memories to be consistent with them. If a guru-style sociopath talks about his levitation sessions over and over again, some of his believers will sooner or later start to form false memories in which they imagine seeing him levitate off the floor. So if you ask those people, "Did you actually ever see the person levitate?" they will enthusiastically say yes, because in their own minds, that illusion has become something indistinguishable from a vivid memory.
Yeah. Much the same thing.
It's pretty long, isn't
it? Yeah. Oh, wow, it is. It's too long. Oh, oh, there's somebody at the bottom there. Maybe there's a little
that's
audio.
No, that's the guy who...
That's...
That's the guy, the Hale Bob guy?
Hale Bob, yes.
Yeah. And this might give you... This is a really long article. It was
Jim Jones. He was another one. Yep.
I didn't realize how long this was. But I wanted to... but you... Maybe, I don't know how long this video is, but,
yeah.
This is Matt. Is anybody old enough to remember? It wasn't, no.
It was
1990-something, in the 90s when the comet came around.
Let's go down to the bottom. A common theme of poison, sainthood, and redemption. That's what they,
Interesting, many sociopaths do indeed center their actions around a bizarre food or drink thing. Often demanding their members eat or drink poisonous or highly offensive substances that no rational person would otherwise consume. The Heaven Gate cult, for example, was led by a classic sociopath named Marshall Applewhite. He managed to convince 38 followers to kill themselves by eating applesauce laced with
phenobarbital.
And that, not only that, they castrated themselves.
Huh?
Notice how Applewhite speaks with authority, clarity and level of charisma, and notice the intensity of his eyes. This is among common trait among sociopaths. Remember, this man gained such influence over his followers that they voluntarily killed themselves in order to maintain his approval.
Oh.
Pretty sad, yeah.
Very sad.
It really did happen. I remember it very well. Hale Bob, you know, the comet was coming and taking their souls, taking them to heaven. So anyway, learn more by not joining my cult, he says. That is Mike Adams, the Ranger. But anyway, I just thought we would mention that. Let's see, we've got about 3 minutes left before.
Interesting, huh?
Oh, you know, one thing I wanted to say before we go is I wanted to.
We've just read that.
No, I wanted to mention the 10 signs of vitamin D deficiency, which is very. Since we're on this issue here, I wanted to read it. 10 symptoms of vitamin D deficiency.
Right? And, let's go right down to that.
Yeah.
They have a preamble, of course. We don't need to read it.
The many faces of vitamin D.
Let's keep going.
And it says
here they are. Am I vitamin D deficient? The flu, number one.
The best way to discover vitamin D deficiency is to take a blood test that will measure the level of the vitamin in your blood. You can either ask your doctor to administer the test or buy a home test kit. However, you are certainly vitamin D deficient if you have any of the following ailments and you need to consult your doctor.
Pardon me.
Regarding your preventative as well as curative options as soon as possible.
Flu. In a study published by Cambridge Journals, it was discovered that vitamin D deficiency predisposes children to respiratory diseases.
Muscle weakness. According to Mike Hopkins-Hollick, leading vitamin D deficiency expert, muscle weakness is usually caused by vitamin D deficiency because for skeletal muscles to function properly, their vitamin D receptors must be sustained by vitamin D.
Psoriasis. In a study published by UK PubMed Central, it was discovered that the synthetic vitamin D analogs were found useful in the treatment of psoriasis.
And chronic kidney disease. According to patients with advanced chronic kidney diseases, especially those requiring dialysis, are unable to make the active form of vitamin D. These individuals need to take
0.25... dihydroxy vitamin D3 or one of its calcemic analogs to support calcium metabolism and decrease the risk of renal bone disease and regulate the parathyroid hormone levels. Diabetes. A study conducted in Finland was featured in Lancet.com, in which 10,366 children were given 200 international units of vitamin D3 per day during the first day of life. The children were monitored for 31 years, and in all of them, the risk of type 1 diabetes was reduced by 80%.
Wow. Asthma. Vitamin D may reduce the severity of asthma attacks. Research conducted in Japan revealed that asthma attacks in school children were significantly lowered in those subjects taking a daily vitamin D supplement of 1,200 units a day.
Periodontal disease. Those suffering from this chronic gum disease that causes swelling and bleeding gums should consider raising their vitamin D levels to produce defensins and calcilicidin compounds that contain microbial properties and lower the number of bacteria in the mouth.
And cardiovascular disease, congestive heart failure is associated with vitamin D deficiency.
Schizophrenia and depression, these disorders have been linked to vitamin D deficiency in a study. And cancer?
Sufficient among pregnant women and during childhood was necessary to satisfy vitamin D receptor in the brain for brain development and mental function maintenance in later life. And you said cancer.
Mm-hmm. Researchers at Georgetown University Medical Center in Washington, D.C. discovered a connection between high vitamin D intake and reduced risk of breast cancer. So, anyway, folks, those are things that we should think about.
These various conditions, it says this prevention is proactive. These various conditions associated with vitamin D deficiency need not be something to fear. Proactive approach to prevention can assist in the avoidance of many chronic diseases with vitamin D deficiency. For one, thousands of dollars can be saved. Not to mention the peace of mind simply at the cost of taking a walk under the sun. Save the umbrellas for the rainy day.
Okay, we're right to the end of the show, actually. We're beyond time. It's 9:02.
Okay.
We hope you got some information from our show, and you can use it, especially the health information. And thank you for staying with us, and stay tuned tomorrow where we'll talk about union news and other issues. Have a great night, folks, and good night.
Good night, everyone. We'll